Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
All right, Javier, normally we start the post show by talking about the biggest newsworthy thing that happened on the episode that we're covering. And so in honor of that tradition, I'm going to have a 10-second moment of silence. All right. Javier, what is your headline coming out of tonight? The Olympics is on, folks. Thanks for tuning in, but we're not going to try very hard episode of Raw.
Oh, man, what a brutal show. I mean, that was I actually enjoyed it. I got a twisted sense of it got to the point where I'm like every single segment had something that just made me angry or just not angry necessarily, but like just there was something that aggravated me. There
yeah,
we go.
Irritated or yeah,
yeah. Everything. Yep. Every single I don't think there was a single segment in the show that didn't.
Oh, I mean, these are fun shows to talk about more than they're fun shows to watch. The talking points last week, there are a number of them. Nobody's mentioned Goldberg for a week because so much has happened since then. It feels like a month ago, and it's like the 77th biggest thing that happened in the last 7 days. In part because Goldberg, people are just over him. They'll pop for him because it's Goldberg, but no one's like, oh, SummerSlam, yeah. So they hype Lashley's going to respond to Goldberg's challenge. What's the follow-up on that? I'm not going to dignify Goldberg with response. Then we get Lashley beating up Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander in a situation that portrayed Lashley as basically a babyface turn for him because Cedric is so annoying and Shelton is so annoying, and they're insulting and bickering with each other in a way that's demeaning. And Lashley's like, I'll just beat up both of you idiots. And he did. And then the other big talking point from last week was Nikki Cross winning. One of the other big talking points was Nikki Cross. She wins a title and then a week later loses to Charlotte. Clean. But vows that, you know, she showed she can hang with Charlotte and almost win. So almost a superhero is almost a champion, and the fans are almost into her, but not quite. And then the third big thing from last week was Karrion Kross losing to Jeff Hardy. The announcers bring it up. They don't mention Jeff Hardy used his feet on the middle rope for leverage ever, which would be nice. If I'm Karrion Kross, I'm like, hey, guys, you know, you cheated to win. And he beats Keith Lee, who was the other big talking point coming out of last week's show. I mean, nothing really got advanced. Everything that was a flaw last week, and part of that was out of their hands with the Hardy COVID diagnosis, but Javier, everything that happened last week, the follow-up just reinforced the bad side, not the good side. Whatever was sort of intriguing about last week was sort of snuffed out this week with, oh yeah, yeah, we're not in Thunderdome, but it sure feels like it's the same show.
Yeah, I mean, you have Goldberg show up last week and no appearance this week. And that just tells you – it tells you that the people you're watching on the show don't matter because, you know –
John Cena told us that last week.
Well, and no Cena either. I mean, you know, the people in Kansas City, I don't know what they'd be thinking. And you undersold the Shelton Benjamin and Cedric just, you know, like just – brutal murder. Whenever a big time wrestler goes up against a jobber, it's like that, you know, the jobber is like your health doesn't matter, so we're just going to throw you as hard as we can. And that's what they were doing to Cedric. I'm surprised that they didn't throw him in a garbage can at the him and Benjamin into garbage can and just
yes.
Send care of Impact or something, you know. It was just wow.
and Shelton, by the way, for people that see the show, Shelton buried Cedric
beforehand.
The first words out of Shelton's mouth. So Cedric comes to the ring and he's wearing something weird, and then he like sounds normal, and then he starts getting like more worked up and speed talks and yells and overmodulates all the stuff he does that is just cost him, you know, like hundreds of thousands of dollars because he can't like actually just watch himself back and go, oh, maybe that's awful and I should adjust. And now they're leaning into it because Shelton walks out and goes, Has anyone ever told you how annoying your voice is or something like that? And, you know, everyone's nodding, yes, but, I mean, yeah, they just buried, and he's a, that's not a babyface line from Shelton. I guess it's a baby. I don't know, is it? It's just Vince wanting to give Cedric a hard time for being annoying, but it's like, that's, Vince's job isn't to make fun of the people he chooses to hire of the vast array of hundreds of options out there, but that half the time seems like what he's doing.
I can't describe it. There's no words to describe it.
No. And the crowd didn't seem all that into Nikki.
Yeah. She did come out twice, and it was funny because I was when she first came out, I was trying to look at the reaction of the people in the crowds, and the kids were kind. Some of the kids were kind of like, oh, you know, this is kind of cool. And I did see one guy in the audience with a kid, like the kid's happy, and he's just like looking up into the sky, like wondering if he left the oven on.
I worry about that all the time. And I don't use the oven that often. I don't use the oven that often, but anytime I do, for like 3 days after, I'm like, oh my God, did I turn it off?
So yeah, I mean the thing is that at the end of the day, I was just thinking about it as was watching the end of that match. I don't think it's going to matter anyway. The whole point of this is to get heat on Charlotte, and I think Nikki's just basically in the same position that Kofi Kingston has got put in, where, you know, just have someone that could be a feel-good champion for a little bit until we get into what we really want to do, the meat of the matter, which would be, you know, and so why get invested in Nikki Cross? Because, I mean, if I were to just, like, look, you know, take a, you know, 500-foot view of it and say, okay, well, you know what? It's the story of this person who wants to believe in themselves and you know, someone that you didn't think that could do it, and she was able to do it. But what you don't follow that up by having her get killed on the decks, and, you know, she looked like a chump. So, you know, but okay, so you could build it up. But the thing is that at the end of the day, she's not going to win. She's not going to come off of this better. Even when she eventually loses, it's not like she's only going to slide down a little bit. She's going to be not on TV.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's pause and introduce this episode, covering a scintillating episode of WWE Monday Night Raw. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, July 26, 2021. And I'm Wade Keller, the founder, editor, publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter, and editor of the PWTorch.com website with live TV coverage, live pay-per-view coverage, lots of other features, breaking news, hits and misses columns, pay-per-view previews, and much more. So hope you're checking that out. Also links to all of our podcasts. So our main website, PWTorch.com. And also host of this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show and Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcasts. And I'm joined today by PW Torch VIP podcaster and PWTorch.com contributor, Javier Machado, who often, pretty much almost always, joins us for the closing segment before Mailbag on post shows, and he is joining me for a full show analysis when we had our brief production meeting and sound check before we went live after Raw. I asked him how excited he was that I picked this week for him to be on for the full show. But Javier, I'm glad you're here to help lead us through all the things that irked you throughout the show.
Yeah, I got copious notes here.
Good. Our phone number, we'd love to hear from you. Gripe with us or tell us what you liked. I mean, you're not going to be mocked for seeing this differently than us. It is a friendly environment, even if in the end we think you're wrong. You might give us something to think about. So let us know. Vent, gripe, or otherwise. The phone number here to join us on the show is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. Again, 347-215-8558. Push 1 on your keypad. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Javier, let's get rolling with phone calls, and we'll begin here with area code 760. 760, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, Wade, this is Edward. You can hear me from High Desert, California?
Yes, we can, Edward. Thanks for calling.
Okay, first time calling, so I'm not familiar with the way it works. But yeah, this episode of Raw was pretty tough. It was rough all the way around, and I guess as you ended it in your notes there, I guess it was a throwaway Raw for the Olympics. But it doesn't make any sense considering they just got back to live events. I mean, they couldn't have had a better lead-in last week from SmackDown to Money in the Bank and all the rumors surrounding Raw last week, and it just seems like everything just tanks for Raw. And it's just curious, like, how's it going to get better? Like, who are they going to move when they do the shakeup? Who's, you know, what, Seth Rollins is now here, and that's going to be something? Like,
yeah,
it's mind-boggling.
Javier, I'll throw to you. I mean, where is their hope? Should there be hope?
I don't know, because, I mean, the Viking Raiders, they've buried, what, like three acts today? I mean, I think this is a record for the number of acts that they've damaged.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, in the Viking Raiders and Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin and Nick Cross to some extent, it just
I
don't know.
I guess T-Bar and Mace are already buried, but –
yeah. Oh, and Karrion Kross and Keith Lee. That was when I saw that advertised, my first thought was, awesome, we get to see who's deeper in the doghouse.
Yep, exactly. Well, they're it's so funny. I was like, they're not going to have the NXT champion lose. And I'm like, wait a second, they just did last week. How ridiculous this declaration is that? Yeah, they totally could have had Kross lose again. And just I could see Vince doing it out of defiance and stubbornness in the criticism that he received last week for, you know, disrespecting NXT and what they're doing. But they kind of buried themselves. I mean, Cross just needs to be in there with smaller guys. And, you know, when you're trying to get Cross, established as a killer, dominant force, and you put him against Keith Lee, who is bigger than him, and then they just have a clunky match where they can't do anything against each other, and Lee is a shell of his former self, at least against Cross, he looks that way. It's just not good. And anyway, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, the only thing to answer the question about how do you fix it,
yeah.
I mean, changing things up, WWE fans have a short memory, so you move somebody over and you kind of get a fresh coat of paint. They have to rely on, you know, building Drew McIntyre back up. I think they've got someone in Damian Priest if they don't mess him up. But I don't see anybody in NXT that they can call up, because everyone they've called up, they've essentially – I mean, Karrion Kross is not even officially up. And I look at what he's doing. But, yeah, I mean, this is it's a lot of chickens coming home to roost. That's the right – yeah, I hope that's
yeah.
right. yeah, where, you know, it's just – a long time of just relying on your top guy, your biggest draws being, you know, people who like went by, you know, are part-timers and people are not even wrestling anymore, and just not building people and just running through just things not working. And yeah, I mean, I don't know where the next, you know, like Becky Lynch kind of gave him like another jolt in the arm when she, you know, when she rose to prominence, and I think the women's division helped out a lot. Cause you know, you basically added like a whole entire new like group and a new thing to follow on your 5 hours show a week. But even, you know, as you've damaged the women also, what do you have left? It's like, you know, up higher, but yeah. So I try to go upbeat, but ended up sliding down.
And I'm not sure that Goldberg does himself like any favors when he's given a lot of TV time. Like, I think a smaller dose of the Goldberg protect him. I think that's always been the case for him, dating back to his rookie year. But it also plays into his reputation as like this, you know, legacy star in his 50s who has been brought back over and over, sort of cashing in on something from the past to make up for the fact that Vince has done a poor job in recent years building up people. But when he doesn't show up, you know, the second week after his return, it does kind of make him, you know, the part-time guy. And I'm really curious by the time we get to SummerSlam where the fan sentiment is, especially after Lashley, you know, I argue slightly tongue-in-cheek, turned babyface tonight. So I'm sorry, Edward, we're not doing a better job at cheering you up here, but I mean, no. There are not super easy solutions because as Todd Martin has pointed out, artfully, astutely, it's a very short list. I mean, a list might be the wrong term of wrestlers who are better off because of their Vince McMahon run television time, Raw and SmackDown. There's very few wrestlers who would have better off compared to their reputation coming in. And this was just another example of that.
Yeah, no, it's I get it. I completely get it. With was it Cross and Keith Lee? I thought it was kind of funny when Corey said he said something like Cross was dominated the time with the match last week. However he put it, it was like, oh, he dominated the length of the match, and it's like it was what 109 seconds. I mean, like it's weird. Like you know, it was 109 seconds. Like come on, like. What's dominating? Like it's like a pitcher in the first inning getting, you know, striking out the side and then second inning giving up, you know, 10 runs and you're like, hey, he dominated the first inning. Like, no, there's no, that doesn't, you know, that phrase doesn't go. And I just want to throw in with, they must have just given Nikki the belt and did all that stuff thinking the fans were coming back. They were going to be able to grab some kids or something like that because she's so generic, like in what she's saying, trying to be like, I know, I guess it was quote unquote her character. And I know we all want some like goodness in the world and everything, but it's just so generic. And there's, you know, you what is it like strike while the iron's hot? Well, they struck while the iron was cold because there was no real buildup, you know, to her in any level to where the fans were behind her and this, you know, whatever, this can-do fighting attitude underdog and just rising up. And I guess lastly, it's just, do we need Rhea and Charlotte again? And I didn't get the opening promo because Rhea or Charlotte came out talking about SummerSlam, which is 5 weeks away to get her title shot. Why wouldn't she have said tonight to get a title shot? And then tonight they did a contenders match, which doesn't make any sense because there was nothing on the line. And then next week, now Nikki challenged Charlotte to just a match? Or is it a title match?
I would say it's not. There's no such thing as just a match. It's either a title match or a championship contenders match. No apostrophe, makes no grammatical sense. The crowd, it was so funny too with the crowd. Funny for us. When Nikki goes, you know, when there's going to be a rematch next week, and they're just like, oh, so we sat through this show. I mean, John Cena, I think he was scheduled to be there, so he's probably doing something after Raw. But the crowd is like, oh, so fun. So we got to see part one of two parts, and, you know, they're going to have a rematch next week. The crowd wasn't exactly excited about the rematch, not only because, quote, they don't get to see it, but I also think they're like, also thinking, they're going to do this match again? You know, like on two levels, the idea of a rematch as a hook for next week, it just fell flat. And, of course, I'm just thinking when they announced that, like, how there's either a lack of self-awareness or a lack of a plan to get out of the trap that they've set for themselves where everybody just wrestles the same people all the time, barely in different circumstances. And, you know, AEW does not have this problem. You know, I mean, AEW is just an example of how to not do that. Javier, I mean, did that cross your mind when it's like, oh, we're going to get Nikki and Charlotte again. Like the number of times wrestlers face each other before they get to their pay-per-view match and then often after their pay-per-view match just diminishes the value of any of the matches because you're just so sick of them and it becomes so familiar seeing them against each other.
There was a point on the show where Saxton forgot that Sheamus had moved on from Carrillo because he called he started calling Damian Priest Carrillo. so that's how much repetition there was there. So, you know, so yeah, it's just, and with this show being a much, you know, lighter show and, you know, them taking off, AEW, from what I understand, are packing all their shows to, you know, draw the audience and give them what they want. So they have like a big match and a big thing, you know, we discuss later why, you know, all the name pay-per-views, but they have all these name pay-per-views coming out, Dynamite shows. to try to make them feel special. And they're, you know, building every single show as like, you've got to come here and watch. And they're all unique. You have one that ends in a death match. You have one that ends, you know, in a title match. So, but this is like, again, we saw Viking Raiders and AJ Styles and almost again. The first of what's going to be many between Sheamus and Priest again. So yeah, it's just,
this resembles somebody who's in a relationship who's trying to destroy it. Because Vince McMahon seems like he's trying to destroy his relationship with his viewers with shows like this at a time that there is this tempting option that maybe many Raw viewers have a crush on called AEW Dynamite. And Vince is not counterpunching. He's not counterprogramming with this. And, you know, wrestling can be much better than this. This is not, you know, like an inevitable result of society or culture or the talent that he has to work with or the damn writers who keep letting him down or, you know, whatever. It's like, it doesn't, it actually, like Dynamite shows, like, and Dynamite's not perfect, but, and hasn't been perfect during its, you know, nearly 2 years on the air, but it's been really good lately. And Raw has so many flaws that just, we talk about often, and every once in a while they have a show that's puzzling and interesting. And other times there's like several good matches and some good promos. And, you know, the wrestlers are giving it their best shot. But I was watching the show thinking of CM Punk's promo from 10 years ago, where he sat in the ring and said, I love my job, but I hate the people who I work for. And I think there's a lot of wrestlers out there who are like, you know, I love being a wrestler, but I hate the show that I'm on right now and the storylines I'm given. And, you know, they're just sort of doing their best to make the best, you know, putting an honest effort in to do a good job with what they're given. But I didn't see a lot of a sense of inspiration, even among the performers tonight. But, you know, I could just be projecting because I think the booking is pretty bad. Edward, back to you for any follow-up.
No. The only other thing, this is probably more a topic for like a whole nother show, but I guess like with the rating stuff, like last week with what Raw did with the 1.9, they couldn't have had a better lead-in. And even if it's just optically, I know demo-wise, I understand the week four increases percentages. Who knows by who's watching TV? I know you talk about the points, like it was one of their higher ones of the year. But even optically, like 1.9, they couldn't have had asked for a better lead-in with everything going on, and they still only get 1.9. So I guess my kind of question is, was it January of 2020 when the McMahons came out and said, we're here, we hear you, blah, blah, blah. The truth is they really don't, and I guess, like I said, it's probably more a question for another day, but where does this go? They must be going to streaming next just to cash in, because otherwise, if you were USA, would you be, I don't know. I don't think I'd be sitting here saying, why am I going to pay all this money for this show when, you know, what is it, July 4th, Memorial Day? I mean, it just completely tanked now. Okay, the Olympics are on. Then we're going to come to football Monday nights, and you're like, what am I getting? And, you know, as somebody watching the show, you're like, yeah, I mean, I'm in and out on Raw. Like, I pay attention to what goes on, but I'm not watching, you know, maybe I'll watch some of it, and then I get off it and whatnot. And that, but that's the end of it. And let me just say, I'm not used to talking to two people at once, so I do apologize, Javier, for not acknowledging you and tossing anything your way. But
acknowledge Javier.
I don't know how. You know, I'm in California. You're in Miami. I don't know how you didn't know Rolling Thunder was there. Was that what it was called last week?
Yeah, I'm sheltered. I basically go. It's been rough at work, so most of my time has been on that. And when I'm not doing that, I'm watching wrestling. So that's pretty much what I'm spending my time right now.
But I appreciate it. I think I said last week I signed up for VIP. The only bad thing about it is there's so much stuff to listen to.
It's not required to listen to it all. The same thing with Netflix. Yeah, you don't feel guilty not watching it all. You just know there's always something there if you need it.
Yeah, you know, it's certain times in wrestling where it's like something catches you and you're like, you just want to hear all about it. But I appreciate everything you guys do, and I appreciate the phone call. Thank you very much, and I'll get off.
Great, Edward. Thanks. Appreciate you going VIP and the kind words about the service, and hope to hear from you again.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you, Edward.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Our number is 3472158558. We will go to Kansas City next, although I don't believe Greg went to the show tonight. We'll find out. Greg, welcome back.
Yeah, I wasn't able to make it to the show as I'm actually not in town right now. So, but I caught most of the show. On what I got to say, what I can say though is that I wasn't given much of a reason to regret not getting a ticket. So,
no, depending on, I don't know if we're going to hear from anyone on site yet. We didn't hear from anyone ahead of time. So if you're listening live in Kansas City and traffic,
I was thinking I could get a gauge of like the crowd reactions. That would have been nice, but ultimately it didn't work out that way. So, I was a little more critical than you and your correspondent were on a Friday show. I have a feeling that there's a lot more criticism to go around on this week's show all around. And, I was listening to the last call and just the repetitiveness. And I guess we'll start with the positives. I like Sheamus and Damian Priest as a program. I think those guys can have some good physical matches together. Although, like everything else, it risks becoming stale very quickly if they keep going to that rematch over and over again. The tag team title stuff is fine, and the stuff with Riddle, and it's naturally progressing to, I guess, Randy Orton's return, where he's going to give Riddle some backup, and that's a nice storyline. And then outside of that, I wanted to give the Nikki Ash thing the benefit of the doubt last week. And, I mean, I still am. It's dependent. I give it a few weeks and see how the fans respond. But I got to say, everything from how she looks into the ring, like in that segment with Charlotte just towering over her and looking like an absolute superstar in comparison to the promos, to the – it's just I can't see it clicking at this level. And I got to say, I hope for her, much like in R-Truth, I feel like there's a place for her, but it's not in this position. I just hope that she just doesn't get completely thrown to the side after she inevitably loses the title. But in this position, I don't think that there's any long-term or really short-term benefit of having her in this position. Apparently the crowds over the weekend at the live shows weren't reacting to her. I can't see this doing too much for her in terms of getting the crowd behind her. And Charlotte's really trying. I mean, Charlotte's trying very hard in this position to get the crowd behind her. I don't know how much it's working, though. And I will make a prediction now. I feel pretty confident in saying that my prediction is Charlotte will win the title at SummerSlam, and that's when you see Becky Lynch return in front of that crowd in Las Vegas. That's my prediction for SummerSlam.
I think having Becky return in that stadium setting makes a lot of sense, Javier. I think Rhea Ripley, the fans are clearly indicating to Vince, she needs to be a babyface. Whatever he wants to do with her. I mean, there's going to be a real headwind to making her a heel, even after the Charlotte, Nikki situation. I think Charlotte is getting, the lion's share of mic time, and they're portraying her as just nasty towards Nikki, degrading Nikki, demeaning her. Some third D I can't think of, copyright Paul Heyman. And so it does seem like that it's what we're seeing now really is a setup for that. Nikki is champion, so Charlotte can be a bully and a jerk, and then Becky can come and, save the day and go after her. What do you think, Javier?
Yeah, that's pretty much how I've got it plotted out. The problem with the thing with Ripley, though, is just that they tell me that she's a babyface, but she's not really coming across as that. They're still scripting her to do and say stuff that's not really conducive to that, she also is dismissing, fairly dismissive Nikki. I was going to say Nikki Ash, but I refuse to say that name.
why did they switch from Ash to ASH, by the way?
Oh, that drove me nuts. That was add that
do,
to.
Do,
the...
I mean, is there some something where there was a trademark issue, or they found out at Nikki Ash is some historical figure that Drew's going to talk about as some villain, and they realized, I don't know. It's awkward and clunky.
Yeah, that would make sense, that because I could totally picture a rock star, Nikki Ash, because they really hammered the point home. There was an edict, make sure you say ASH all the time, so people, get used to that and don't call her Nikki Ash. that felt like an edict, because I mean that they were so over the top during that match that it had to have been something along those lines.
Greg, back to you.
Yeah, and so I would say that, you know, like I said in my first call last week, like I'm a little more defensive of some aspects of WWE than other people are, especially compared to AEW, which I feel like might get a little too much universal praise, even though the show is on a weekly basis usually very good and has been. I agree with the previous sentiments or the previous call that it has been, like, exceptionally good as of late for the most part. But I got to say there's some things here, like the combination of the repetitiveness, and then I got a question. How long has Mansoor wrestled on Raw this year? Did he even have a full match with Sheamus?
Who did you ask?
I'm sorry, Mansoor. Did he even have a full one-on-one match with Sheamus? I think they might have done a brief thing together, but it wasn't even a full match, I don't think.
I don't even remember. Do you, Javier?
They crossed paths around the time that Sheamus was feuding with Carrillo. I think they were going to do something along those lines because I think they ended up wrestling because that was when Ali started giving him advice.
Okay.
He was giving him advice for the match against Sheamus, and so then that led to something. But Mansoor was out for a bit, so that's kind of what it felt. If the story felt disjointed, it felt like because he was out for a while. I don't know, they just didn't have time to put him on the show. So the storyline that they were doing with Mansoor felt like it skipped like a couple weeks.
Ah, okay, that makes sense. But, I mean, just I don't think that the guys had hardly any screen time. I guess outside of maybe one match he had with Sheamus, his backstage segments with Ali, another character that has been, like, very poorly. I mean, obviously we saw, like, no payoff with the whole Retribution thing. That was a complete. And then the remnants of that, of course, being thrown out in this match against Ali and Mansoor. It's just like, I mean, it's the beginning of the third week back with fans, and I mean, if you can't expect to throw that out there and get anything other than a tepid to non-existent crowd reaction. So that, on top of the repetitiveness of a lot of the matches and the stories, and you know, I mentioned the bright spots earlier, and they're there, but I got to say that, like, for the most part, it's just not. Unfortunately, it's not an inspiring product right now. And I mean, 3 weeks back with fans, it's like, I mean, it's interesting. You know, you got SummerSlam, and it's a very star-loaded show where they go from there. It's just, unfortunately, even for those of us who, like, really want to see better out of this company overall in general, it's like, you don't feel like you're getting it. I mean, it's just so many of the same things. And one more thing is the Cross-Lee match. It's interesting, you know, Jeff Hardy wasn't there because he's tested positive for COVID, but I got to say this was a much more optimistic performance for Cross than last week. And of course, for Keith Lee, I think that there's still the same question as after his loss to Lashley. But once again, I'd like to think that they have a plan for Cross and Jeff Hardy, but I just can't trust WWE to have a plan for that. But I got to say, Cross, based on this performance, like, it's not looking so bad if there's follow-up. So.
Yeah, and we'll never – well, I should say we'll never know. I mean, but we didn't have the opportunity this week to see what the kind of story arc was of Cross losing to a babyface cheating overtly by putting his feet on the ropes after being dominated for 90 seconds. We didn't get to find out what the plan was. I mean, I'd heard from somebody that, you know, they were fully anticipating Cross destroying Jeff Hardy, if not this week, next week, one of the next couple weeks. I wasn't sure which week, but that won't I mean, you know, Hardy's going to be in quarantining for a couple of weeks based on all reports. So we didn't get to see what the follow-up plan was, and it is awkward. Now it's hard to be it feels unfair to be super hard on what they've done with Cross, not since whatever they were planning was interrupted. I don't think they could have, like, turned this around, Javier, where we're like, what a genius move, having Cross come out and lose to Hardy like he did while he was NXT champion. I don't think there's a way to make it great, but I think there's a way to mitigate some of the jaw-dropped confusion over it, and we just didn't get that. Instead, we got kind of a clunky match where Cross beat the already diminished Lee. There shouldn't be any shame, by the way, in losing to the WWE champion on one week and the NXT champ the next, and Lee was competitive. You know, he had moments, he wasn't squashed, but it's the lack of hype it's just throwing him out there. You know, one, I guess one was answering an open challenge, but even that, in a kind of step back booking standpoint, that's not how you would bring somebody back you believed in, is have them, you know, answer a challenge and then lose instantly and be moved out of that feud. And then this week, you know, losing to Cross in a match that wasn't really billed or hyped up, it defines him down. I don't think Keith Lee can bounce back from this without some, like, it's going to take a lot of heavy lifting. And Lee's going to have to get better cardio shape. And I mean, yeah, I don't see it happening on Raw. I mean, Lee was gone for a while and he comes back. And sometimes when you're gone for a while, you can kind of get people to hit the reset button on how they feel about you. In 2 weeks, you know, Lee needs to go away for, and he's too old to do this, but for like 2 years before he can like come back and have people look at him fresh.
Yeah, the Lee thing, because the other thing to keep in mind on the Lee thing is how he lost. He lost cleanly. He didn't lose by a roll-up or, you know, anything.
Distraction.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And,
not that WWE does that. But you know,
and, I mean, let me see if I can find it. Because he tweeted out something about 6 hours ago. He said,
yep.
I've decided I'm going to tell you guys the story myself. Give me a week or two.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, that's, you know, don't know if that is, you know, work, you know, is that going to be, you know, like a work that he's, you know, he's doing, or if it's just that he's going to like just air his grievances and his
My thinking up here on social media, it's been a thing for months and months. Where have you been? Yeah. Where did you go? And so my hunch is, and it's not clear from the tweet, but it's my assumption, is he's talking about that, not what happened last week.
I think it ties in. Into his frustration with, you know, that he wanted to come back and they didn't have anything for him. And then the way that, you know, so I'm pretty sure that's why I think it's the two of them are related. So that's what I'm thinking. And I was really curious. I was really focused in on the chokeout and, you know, like when a wrestler kicks out at four, to show that he's not weak, that he just, you know, he just, it was just by 1 second.
Bruiser Brody, when he lost, would do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keith Lee really seemed like he was doing that, like a version of that, as he was trying to keep from passing out. Like he was trying to make himself like, he's really fought it, and he's really fought it. And he was like, you know, and he held it for a while. So it kind of made me think that, you know, he's trying to protect his image too. So,
yeah. No, and Lee is someone who would think in those ways. I mean, his reputation is, you know, he's sensitive to losing and how he's portrayed. In terms of passing out, I mean, I don't know if he was selling or it was legit, but I mean, there's times last week and this week where Lee just doesn't seem like he's in ring shape. And, you know, there's nothing like getting in the ring and getting reps in. And they just haven't had that chance during COVID. You know, during the Thunderdome era to do that. You know, Tony Khan was, you know, at Daily's Place giving his guys reps, you know, with all the mega long dark tapings. And WWE just wasn't able to do that. And Lee just seems like someone who needs reps. So, you know, maybe he'll get better if he has a chance to do some of that. Greg, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, just a couple more final thoughts. Number one, best wishes, Talia. It looks like she may have suffered an injury during the tag team match tonight. And also, I simultaneously thought the Willie Lucian promo was both cringy and cute at the same time. So, so that's it for me.
All right. Thanks a lot.
And thank you very much.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, Greg. I already started meeting you. Go ahead, finish your thought.
Oh, I was just saying thank you for taking my call, Molly.
Oh, sure, of course. Yeah, thanks for calling in. I wrote my report that Eva Marie doesn't do much at all in the ring when she's in it, but she manages the little bit that she does do looks so bad. Like, in a way you didn't know wrestling could look terrible. Like, I mean, I didn't remember. I mean, I knew people talked about how awful she was, and I knew I was never impressed. But, like, it hadn't fully, like, embedded itself in my being how bad she is. And, I mean, and it seems cruel to say because she did so little in this match. But the little she did, it's so not her thing. I mean, so, I don't know. I could be mean and jump promotions and talk about someone else who's sometimes looks as unfit and badly matched with the wrestling ring as Eva Marie. But I mean, it's just weird. So anyway, I hope Natalia's fine. There wasn't really a single incident where it looked like something went wrong. There was a Mahastral cradle or something where maybe her foot got caught when Doudrop was leveraging her over, but I didn't get a camera angle to see. So hopefully it's not like a torn ligament or anything like that, because, you know, she and Tamina are getting a decent push as tag champs. So anyway, Javier, any thoughts on Eva Marie Doudrop, the post-match video with...
not post-match. It was during the match because it led to the finish, which was a striking finish.
Yes, exactly. Good point. Very good point. Yeah, the Lily Lucian, who wants to inspire people to follow their nightmares.
Yeah, I found that cute. I like it when a face plays on the heels, you know, gimmick. And so I thought it was cute. And I love how Bliss does such a much better Eva Marie. She sounded so good in that, mocking her.
Yep.
That, you know, I enjoyed that. But yeah, it was just, I feel bad for because I also went back and I spent like a good while watching to see when it happened, and I couldn't see, so that's like, oh man, because you know when you hurt yourself and it was like you weren't really doing anything, that's usually not good, and I'm hoping that it's just something that was just, you know, a cramp or something, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Let's go next to Chris and Mount Palin. Mount Phelan or Mount Palin? Chris.
It's Mount Pearl, actually, but that's okay.
You'll
get it
Pearl?
Right eventually.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Good
evening. This is weird, actually, yeah. Talking directly to Javier instead of listening to him finishing off the calls. I'm not sure how I'm going to handle this.
Yes.
I'll start with a question for you, Wade. When Todd throws your jacket at you, does it take you 15 seconds to get it off your face?
You know, Reginald is really acrobatic, but he's not the brightest guy. You know, like, you know, there's dogs who are really acrobatic, but, like, you know, if you put a pillowcase on their head, like, for 10 minutes, they're just disoriented. And, yeah, this was that was not an impressive moment for poor Reginald. Although it seemed like he could see through it, so maybe he was playing possum.
I just needed somebody standing there going, whoop, 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 whoop. That would have made the day for me, I think. But good grief.
Yes, yes.
I guess we'll start on that segment. That went 8 minutes too long. I think the commentary all night was terrible.
Yes. Oh, God, don't get me started on that. Yeah.
So during
that
match. And
it was 80% bad because of Jimmy Smith.
Yeah, well, during that match, this is what really brought it into attention for me. There was a bunch of people getting names wrong, not just Jimmy Smith, and bless him, he tries. But during that match, Corey, was it that match? No, it wasn't that match. It was the Miz match where Byron was getting soaked, and Corey said, next time, bring a toaster. And I'm like, ooh, I'm not sure that's something you want to be saying on national television.
No.
But the R-Truth, or like the 24/7 title, it's funny in backstage segments. It doesn't need to be on my TV in that sort of a segment. And also, I guess Carrillo's push is over because he came out running after the title at the end of that segment. That's a calamitous fall right there.
Yeah, and it's not like he was part of a parade of eight. You know, they laid off. You know, released almost everybody who normally ran those sprints. So maybe they have high hopes for Umberto, but they just didn't have enough bodies backstage. And that's why he was there. I hope so, because I do think he's got a good upside.
Oh, he's not showing it right now. The other thing I wanted to bring up, the Karrion Kross-Keith Lee match, apart from the fact that Keith Lee just – I completely agree with you, Wade. He looks – awful. He doesn't seem to care right now. He looks completely out of shape, completely out of touch. I don't know what's going on there, and it's worrying because the guy has so much talent, but he's phoning it in. That match, though, they had to book that. That's Vince or Triple H backstage going, oh, you're going to complain? I'll show you. See if you like the winner of this one. that was definitely booked with a finger in the air in our direction, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was thinking, like, what other options were there for Cross to get an even semi-credible win? And there's nobody on the roster. I mean, they could have – I guess I shouldn't say that. They could have had Cross beat Ricochet, and it would have been a better match. And, frankly, it could have gotten, you know, help both guys, even if Ricochet ultimately lost, because Cross is the champion of NXT. He's a badass, you know, in the way he's framed. And they could have done that, and they didn't, you know. So there was that. They could have put Umberto in there and had Umberto give a spirited battle but ultimately use, but both guys, you know, seem respectable. But there's not a lot of options otherwise. You know, you could put Titus O'Neil in there as a sympathetic guy, but that'd be kind of cruel. So, I mean, they just don't – there's not depth. I mean, I guess they could put, like, Lindsay Dorado in there, too, to take bumps for him. But they chose Keith Lee. And if they had high hopes for Keith Lee, they would have built up to that moment that those two fought on Raw and enthroned Lindsay Dorado or Grand Metalik or Umberto or Ricochet in there. And they didn't, and that tells you something.
I think they could have
You mentioned
Go ahead, Javier, real quick. Yeah.
You mentioned last week when we were talking about the Keith Lee having lost. Was it him you were referring to that this is what you do to someone who's leaving the territory?
Yes.
This felt like this is someone who's leaving the territory.
Yeah. And perhaps Lee sensed that because of his tweet. He's like, yeah, I think I'll be fired or cut in the next week or two. And if not, my tweet might instigate it even more and he just wants out. I don't know. I mean, that. I don't know that's the case.
Yeah, it's just speculation, but
how someone act that way. Yeah,
yeah, total speculation, but you know, based on you know, reading the tea leaves, so to speak.
Yep. Yep. All right, go ahead, Chris. Yep.
Yeah. Well, you said Karrion Kross needs to be fighting smaller guys. I mean, they just fed two of them to Lashley, and they could either one of them could have done that job. They both bump beautifully. Cedric especially
good
is
point.
A really good bumper, and it's not like anyone knows if they're face or heel, so who cares on that front. And a few years ago, I coined the phrase Mr. Potato Head Midcard because it really doesn't matter who you put against who. They're all basically exactly the same wrestler. I think we're back in that.
Yeah.
Like, nobody.
Yeah.
WWE doesn't matter right now. It really doesn't. They're all basically the same. They're doing the same gimmicks. Nobody knows who's face and who's heel. And nobody really cares. And it's depressing.
Javier,
speaking of the same gimmick, we saw the birth of yet the third odd couple tag team. Assuming that Corbin and Kevin Owens are going to be probably an odd couple tag team over on SmackDown, because you also have Riddle and
Riddle and Orton, and then Styles and Omos.
Yeah, well, no, the other odd couple being the Mansoor and Ali. So, you know, with Mansoor, all happy, happy-go-lucky, and Ali being the heel. So it's just – so you get that three times now. So it's – it is definitely not good to steal one of Todd Martin's phrases.
Yes. Chris, anything else for us?
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on something. I'm starting to get worried that – the WWE only knows one way to book, and I mean that's a loaded statement right there. But the parallels between Bobby Lashley and Roman Reigns are to the point now that I'm starting to think it's not accidental. They've both just rejected a challenge from a returning Hall of Famer. I mean, Cena's not yet, but he's going to be.
Yeah.
They both stacked and pinned two guys in one was a triple threat, one was a handicap. They're both sort of floating on the edge of a face turn eventually. There's so many similarities between the two. They've both got they're decent talkers who have a mouthpiece that they don't really need. They're just way too similar. And it's almost like they saw, we're having success with Roman Reigns. Let's have the big, muscly black guy on Raw, apart from fighting all the other black guys one by one. Let's have him do the exact same gimmick because that's the only way we know how to book.
Yeah. Javier, I mean, the parallels are there. No question about it.
Yeah, when I actually, I didn't say it out loud, but I thought to myself when Lashley went to, you know, to pin both of them, like stack them and, you know, whatever the phrase that Roman Reigns used. And I'm like, that's just, wow, it's the same thing. It's like they literally have like one page of ideas, and they just keep cut and pasting it and moving it all around.
Yep. I had the same thought watching that. And I also was trying to think of what the phrase was, like smash them and stack them or something, but it's not.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, any closing words from you?
No, I think I'll leave you with that one. Folks, thanks again for taking the call. And so I'll just throw this one in quickly, just in the typical, I have nothing, oh, wait, I have something. If you're
course,
not VIP, you missed an absolute gold Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure this weekend with one of the funniest segments I've ever heard on PW Torch. Go listen to it. It is genius.
Was it related to Mr. Togo?
It was, in fact, related to Mr. Togo and how evil
okay.
he is.
Yes. I was. I messaged them both while I was listening to it. I messaged Nick with the OMG, and did you just say that? And then I messaged Tom with, Nick, close your ears because it's meant to be a surprise, and Tom might want to take credit for this, but how to pick on Nick for his pronunciation of a certain word, since Nick calls out Tom all the time. I'm a troublemaker. with those two. So, yeah, that was a blast. Go VIP, everybody. It's a great way to just settle in and digest the week that is WWE when Saturday afternoon, midday rolls around and that show gets posted with Nick and Tom recapping Raw, SmackDown, and their banter. It's right up there. So I appreciate you mentioning that, Chris.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, gentlemen. Have a good evening.
Awesome. Thank you. All right, I see another, I believe, Kansas City air code jump up. So let's go to 816. Maybe somebody attended the show, or it's a coincidence. Go at 816. State your name and where you're calling from.
This is Darnell calling from Kansas City, Missouri.
Hey, Darnell. Did you attend tonight?
I did. I actually emailed you, and maybe I have the wrong email address, but I emailed you on Sunday to let you know I was going to be in attendance, and I was would like to be your on-site, but hey, I'm here now.
Hey, that's awesome. I am looking. Oh! You know what happened? This is actually a good lesson for her because I don't want what happened to you happen to others. Always put the name of the city in the subject line or email because I search the inbox by city name, and if the city doesn't pop up and I don't like resend it to myself with the city, it won't come up on my search returns if I don't deal with it right away. And I'm pretty good about re-emailing it to myself and putting the city name in it, but I didn't with you, so I apologize for that. But I'm really glad you called in anyway.
Yes, I'm actually currently in the parking lot. I don't know what happened, but ask away. I was there in attendance.
Awesome.
Me and my best friend sat front row, and it was quite the show.
Okay, I definitely have some questions for you. I'm really glad you called in. My first question was, when they opened up Raw, they went to a close-up of the front row of fans. Javier, are you used to this as an Impact viewer? When you don't have a big crowd, you focus on the first three rows with a close-up to show enthusiasm, to convey enthusiasm among a small audience. And then the camera angle, instead of the hard camera shooting at 90 degrees from the entrance, the camera angle was shooting at, 135 degrees at the stage and the crowd. It made it look like they were trying to hide a smaller crowd. But then when Drew came out, they actually did a wider shot, and it actually looked like it did wrap around quite a bit. So I'm curious if it was a slow-arriving crowd, if I was reading too much into the camera angles, and how full the building was. It looked like certainly the upper deck was tarped off.
The super upper deck was tarped off, but when I looked around, I kid you not, it was about probably 80-85% full. It was pretty packed in there.
Was it late arriving at all, because it seemed like by the time Drew was out there, they were going to wider camera angles than early on.
Yeah, there were people trickling in at the very beginning of the show. Truth be told, we literally walked in as Nikki's music was hidden. So it was people were getting in there slowly, but by the time I think Charlotte was kind of like halfway through her promo, it was pretty full in there.
Javier, did it jump out to you that it felt like they were trying to mask a small crowd in the camera angles? Not that anybody else is, you know, most people are noticing what I'm noticing when I watch, but did it jump out to you at all?
Well, now that you mention it, when they did do the shots of the crowds, it was, you know, tied in on the people. You know, usually you get like more, and you usually, and you get the sweeping, you know, the sweeping thing, and you're gonna get that. You basically, like, each shot had, like, you know, three or four people in it instead of, you know, a whole handful.
And even when they shot the crowd in the lower deck, they were shooting like three sections kind of close to the stage, and I was like, okay, they're trying to hide empty seats, but if that's not true, they just got to do a better job. They got crowds back. Like, show us an 85% full building. You know what I mean? Like, or lower deck, like, own that. You know, like, show it off. Because this felt like they were trying to hide a small crowd the way that they shot it. Anyway, Jarnell, what was the enthusiasm of the crowd at the beginning of the show? And I can tell in your tone, maybe you have an opinion on this too in terms of the energy level. Over the course of the 3 hours, did it change? What was the ebb and flow of the energy in the building?
Yeah, it was definitely up and down. At the very beginning of the show, I would say everyone was amped, everyone was hyped up, and it's pretty much something all the way through until about the Sheamus and Damian Priest match is kind of where it felt like it peaked a little bit, and then from there, I think it was the AJ and I think it was a tag match after that. It kind of dipped a little bit, which shocked me. But when AJ came out, that was at that point. That was probably the pop of the night. When AJ came out, it was, I don't know what happened. It was insanity.
Javier, jump in with some questions.
Did when Keith Lee came out, were people doing the Bastion's Glory stuff or not?
It was very small, little pockets were started and never really gained action. It never, I mean, even when Karrion Kross came out, it was flat. When Keith Lee came out, it was a small pop, but it was still somewhat flat. It felt like Karrion Kross was, which was much as NXT. But when Keith Lee came out, I expected a bigger pop than what happened because they had shown the graphic right before the match started and seemed like people popped for it. But when Keith Lee's music hit, I think the new music he has does him no justice. I think he needs to either get better music or back to his Basking His Glory music, because it was, I expected a bigger pop for Keith Lee, and it was literally no one seemed like they cared.
Your cell connection broke up a little bit. What was Cross's reaction like?
It was flat. Nothing happened. No one cared that Cross was coming out. It was really weird.
And I have a feeling if Adam Cole came out, the crowd would pop. Like, Javier, do you agree? Like, this isn't a case of no one watches NXT. This is a case of people who are familiar with Cross, as the NXT crowd is at the Capitol Wrestling Center, just not that enamored with his character and his ring work.
Yeah,
I would
think
agree
he would, yeah.
Yeah. So give I don't know, give me a list of who the most over wrestlers were. Like, where's that top tier? Was it just one or two, or were there three or four or five who all were kind of clustered as
No, I would say you're, like I said, to me, the pop of the night was AJ. Again, surprise! I didn't expect him to get the reaction he did. Riddle, again, explosion. Everyone loves Riddle. I don't want to go into the dark matches yet, but we'll talk about that pop, because that was definitely the pop of the, well, 100% pop of the night. Charlotte, it was really hot and cold with Charlotte. When she first came out, the very top of the show, a lot of boos. But when she came out to face Nikki at the end, she got an insane pop. It was very strange how Charlotte's reactions were hot and cold literally within the same night. It was very weird.
Hey, there's a star here. Yay, I want to cheer a big star, but I don't like her. Boo. But now I like her even less. Boo. You get that a lot. Yeah.
That's almost exactly how it was. Even when Charlotte got the pin, I'm not sure how well it came across on TV, but when she got the pin, it was a huge pop. It was deafening how loud it was when she when she won that match. So very odd.
Yeah.
Very, very odd.
I don't know. Do you get the sense that AJ Styles would be a good and logical future babyface opponent for Bobby Lashley?
100%. 100%. That would be a match they built. You know, I'm not sure how they would get away from him and almost together. I don't know if they split them. They won. I don't know. But yeah, I would say that would be a fantastic rivalry. I would love to see that happen, and I think AJ would probably give Bobby some of the best matches he's ever had.
Yeah. What do you think, Javier?
Well, I think you could say AJ Styles will give blank the best matches he's ever had, and I – you know, AJ Styles is my favorite wrestler of all time. So,
yeah.
You know, so yeah, I mean, he, I was, as a matter of fact, watching the match.
You'd watch to the end of the Earth to see one of his matches, wouldn't you?
Yeah. The, I'm probably missing a reference.
So
there. But,
oh, he's a flat earther.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. What was it?
I thought it was such an obvious lame joke. And then
I just, when people think stupid things, I try not to remember that. but during that match, I was actually thinking, like, wow, with all the stuff that may be going on in other places, with all the talent that might be coming back, just to think seeing him wrestle some of the people that are out there right now. You know, it's before it was like some of the people coming up through NXT that I'd like to see him wrestle. But now I'm like, well, there's some other people outside of the WWE environment that I'd like to see AJ Styles in a program with. But yeah, I mean, he's making almost look good.
Yeah.
In, you know, so it's like amazing. You know, yeah.
I want to see AJ Styles against Eva Marie in a mixed gender match and see if he can pull off, you know, 1.5 stars from that. Okay, go ahead, Turner. Who else was over?
I would say Damian Priest. I mean, even Sheamus. I mean, that first match, I thought it was a really, really good match. And when Sheamus' music hit, and I think it was just because of the excitement in the air. But yeah, Damian Priest, when he got that pin, the crowd exploded. I'm sure everybody saw his mask break, but I think during the commercial break, the referee, Sheamus, and one of the camera guys were all trying to help Sheamus fix his mask. I don't think that was a spot. I think that was accidental. Because he was really
trying to fix
his mask during the
yeah.
And then we started all chanting, and I don't think it came across on TV. We kept yelling, "Take it off," because it was just hanging on his head, and he kept playing with it, so we all started screaming, "Take it off." And he was acting like he was going to take it off, then he, you know, kissed his hand and slapped his behind, like, "Shut up." And then it came off, and of course we popped when it actually popped off his head. But other than that, everyone else seemed like they got a pretty, "Yay, thanks for being here." And I don't think it was because of the temperament of the crowd. I just think it wasn't really awe-inspiring as far as the show start to finish.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. It felt like when they announced at the end of rematch next week with Charlotte and Nikki, the crowd was like, yay, but not really that exciting. Like, it wasn't a great show ending pop from Kansas City fans. Not their fault.
Well, because during that match, I mean, it didn't really get loud, but there was a lot of "We Want Becky," little small pockets starting here and there, and then it would die off. And then you kind of hear the "We Want Becky" started up again, and then it will kind of die off. So Charlotte was really just beating the crap out of her the whole match, and I was feeling kind of bad that they would put their Raw Women's Champion in the match just to get the dog crap beat out of her for no reason.
How did the crowd react to Reginald and R-Truth? And an idea that sounded better in the pitch room than in execution, "Let's mic up R-Truth." And I can't imagine how bad it sounded in the pitch room, but somehow it's even worse than execution. Did that work for you in the audience?
No. I mean, it got a little of a pop when we realized that, oh, he's keeping this mic on. But, I mean, it was just it was an acrobatic display. That's all it really was. Granted, it's the 21st Ever Championship. Is it really a match to begin with? But just keep that relegated to the backstage.
Yeah, I was expecting the reason they mic'd him up, that there was some sort of, you know, gag that they were going to do. You know, like, Reginald's going to leap over R-Truth, and R-Truth is going to be like, "Holy shit." And then he, like, put his hand to his mouth, like, "Oops, I'm mic'd up." And, you know, look at the camera and go, "Sorry." And the announcer's going to go, "Oh, R-Truth's going to be fine for that." You know, they still believe him because they know it's coming. But, like, there was nothing. Like, what was the point of it other than, yeah, I don't get it. So
I didn't. Yeah, none of us got it. And we were all just kind of sitting there like, okay, so now what? It didn't make any sense.
No. I mean, it's just so, like, representative of Raw right now. Just things happening. And you just, our show here is just like trying to figure out what maybe they had in mind, even if it wasn't a good idea, at least you could try to like get in their head about what they were thinking. And it's hard to do that with like most things that puzzle us. It's hard to even come up with a theory that they might have had to justify it. It's that just haphazard and weird.
Yeah,
you want to jump in with?
Did any of the wrestlers like try working the crowd during the time that they hit the ring and then we wait for commercials?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, Riddle was not literally nonstop when he you can kind of tell they broke for commercial. He jumped out of the ring. He was running all around the outside of the ring, saying, you know, hi to everybody, slapping hands. My buddy caught his sandal when he kicked it off the second time he came out. He was running around saying hi to everybody. Even Sheamus at the very beginning, when that kind of went off, Sheamus was, he wasn't really, you know, being a heel, so to speak. He was talking to people while the cameras were on, or while they were on break. What's her name? The Ascension 2.0. What's her name? Mason T-Bar. They kind of did the same thing. They were out there. Now, they were more or less healing off. They was yelling at people, calling them stupid and ugly and fat. But other than that, no, Charlotte was when they
accurate,
the last match. Pretty accurate.
Okay.
Pretty spot on. and then Charlotte was when they were. I think they were changing the mat or the covering on the mat while they were at the break. She literally just stood in one spot and she just stared directly out to the audience. I don't know if she saw someone she knew or she was just doing her pose, but yeah, she literally stood there for like 2.5 minutes and just stared out into the audience.
Wow. So, anything else happened to keep you entertained during breaks or anything like that that we didn't see on television probably?
No, they did your typical, okay, we're going to do, everyone show me your Undertaker face, your Rock eyebrow, Hogan pose. That was kind of your, when they pan the cameras and try to get people to do stuff. Other than that, they didn't have nearly as many, because I've gone to many a show in the past, and not nearly as many of the self promotions of, hey, look at us, we go overseas, and we. And granted, I know they don't have a lot of tapes from last year to have done any of that stuff, but they weren't any doing any of that extra pat us on the back because we help out, you know. This program and we do this fundraiser thing. They didn't do any of that, really. None of those video packages.
Let's talk about what happened after Raw went off the air.
All right. Well, we got a dark match. They really didn't advertise it because the advertisement we got was Bobby Lashley. Now I can't remember. As soon as you ask me, I forget. It was Bobby Lashley and somebody in the dark match. But yeah, that didn't happen. It was Mason T-Bar versus Riddle and John Cena.
Nice.
So, of course, as soon as Cena's music hit, I mean, the roof exploded. Because I don't think anyone knew about that dark match until I think they're at the break. It's probably the last break of Charlotte and Nikki is when they came out. Okay, guys, don't forget when this match is over with, our next match is going to be John Cena and Riddle versus Mason T-Bar, and then the place kind of exploded. And then, yeah, but as soon as the show went off the air, Cena's music hit, because he actually came out to the ring and helped pick Nikki up and kind of helped her out up the ramp. But, yeah, that place exploded when Cena's music hit.
Where did Riddle's, talk about the dynamic, actually, between Riddle and Cena, and if you think there was, like, chemistry there. We got a hint of it last week. Just what they do to play off of each other? Did Riddle just seem like he was in awe of being in the ring of Cena and playing that up, or was he his equal, or was Cena deferential to Riddle to try to help him get over?
No, they did the same bit they did on Raw last week, the bro thing. And then actually, Cena, he started singing Bro, and then they started singing Bro like they did on the show. And it was, that's all they did was the bro spot. However, in the match, of course, Riddle's in there for the lion's share of the match. Gets the hot tag. Cena comes in, shoulder block. And then him and Riddle did the five knuckle shuffle. And then Cena set up for an AA, and then Riddle did RKO. 1, 2, 3, everyone goes on happy.
Gotcha. Yeah. If you mentioned him, I don't remember expanded comments on Drew McIntyre and how he came across. He was sort of, you know, this MVP of sorts of the Thunderdome era, and he's just in this, like, mid-card feud with Jinder, limited or no mic time. How did the crowd react to him? Did it seem like, hey, there's Drew, the guy who kept us sane during the pandemic, or was it just sort of blah?
No, I would say it was a, hey, we like you. Say you're going for a championship right now, but hey, we respect you. You did a damn good job, you know, holding the fort down, but
we
want to take you stay in the mid car for a little bit, do a couple of feuds in the mid car. It's kind of like you've had your fill. Okay. My suspicion would be, he's probably going to get traded to SmackDown whenever the draft happens. But I think that's, in my opinion, that's what he should do, is just kind of lay low. He doesn't need to be chasing Bobby for anything. Leave it alone until you get drafted, because he's going to have that revolt like they did Roman, you know, up for 5-6 years. It's just like, don't try to put him up there anymore. But it was respectable. Like, hey, Drew, yeah, we like you. We don't hate you yet, so don't make us hate you.
Javier, anything else you want to ask?
During the Lashley segment, it was Goldberg chant. Do you sense any disappointment that there was no Goldberg on the show?
At least I wasn't. I don't think anyone was expecting Goldberg. I mean, when MVP made his Brady joke is when we started yelling Goldberg again. Because that was that funny.
Yeah.
We don't find that comical at all. That hurts my feelings.
No.
That's unnecessary.
Yes.
And we will definitely come back on a sidebar. Leave my Mahomes alone, because we will come back for that title.
I hope you do. I'd love to see the Vikings. I'd take the Vikings losing in the Super Bowl to your Chiefs. That would be a step up for me as a Viking fan. Cool. Is there anything else at all that you remember or thought of during our conversation here, Darnell, that you want to bring up about your experience at the show?
No, like I said, it was, for the most part, I wasn't disappointed in the show. I definitely wasn't blown away. You know, if I'm going to take away one really good memory from that show, it's probably, I've tried to search for one that I can even come up with. I would say the Damian Priest Sheamus match was a really, really good match. I mean, we all know Sheamus likes to lay it in stiff on both sides, even with that mask on. Those guys worked really hard. That was probably, for me, the match of the night. That was just a really, really good hard-hitting match, and I can see they're trying to pump Priest up to do something. But other than that, it was a decent show, but not something I would go back to the DVR or in 5 years. Let me go back and watch that.
I did remember one thing I wanted to ask. Was a crowd into Miz and Morrison and the water blasters? Like, did you sense that a lot of fans who attended were like, oh, this is really funny and part of why I came for WWE Entertainment?
Yes, it was hilarious. I mean, when he literally, I'm not sure, did you guys see him spraying Saxton at all?
Yep.
Okay, yeah, because he literally did, it was like 5 or 6 cannons that he just kept blasting Saxton with. And Miz is the Miz. I think he's comfortable in his role. He knows his role extremely well. I think he's probably one of the better. He knows his role. He doesn't try to do more or less than what he needs to do. He gets his stuff in, gets out, and he goes on. So I would say, that match – that was another good match, but the Miz is where everyone's focus was, because he was on the outside of the ring, nonstop shooting water at people, and that's just what he was doing.
What, he got tipped over going into a commercial break on his wheelchair, and he was back in the chair after the break. Did they do a bunch, like, a comical spot, draw a lot of attention to how he ended up getting up because we saw him tipped over?
No, it was Riddle. He was laying on the apron, kicking his feet up. He did that, like, three times, and then Morrison kicked him out of the ring, and then Morrison finally picked him up and set him back up. Well, wait. I think maybe AJ set him up. I don't remember.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's... I wasn't sure if Miz got out of the chair somehow and tried to re- or if he had help. So somebody helped him out. Cool. Well,
yeah,
Darnell, thank you so
AJ
much for
or,
calling in. Or more
my
than
pleasure. That. My pleasure.
Yeah. And, yeah, thank you so much. And hopefully next time they're in town, if you decide to go, you'll give us a call again.
Will do. Will do.
Awesome. Thanks. So, yeah, reminder to everybody, if you want to be an on-site correspondent, it's really nice to know ahead of time that you're going, and we can kind of look for your phone number and arrange for you to be on the show. As I want to underline with Darnell, it's important you put the name of your city in the subject line or the body of the email, because I just do a search because we get a lot of emails. And then it just, you know, we're booked into October now with on-site correspondents. I mark them down, but when I search for the city is kind of how I stay organized. So if you're going to any upcoming Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDowns, it would be great if you let me know. We don't have – this won't last, I'm sure, by Monday we will, but we don't have anybody from Chicago who said that they're going yet. So that spot is open to be our on-site correspondent next Monday. That would be great. We also don't have anyone yet for August 11th in Pittsburgh for AEW. And August 13th for SmackDown in Tulsa or Raw in San Antonio. So, if you're attending any of those shows and any of them after that, Houston, Phoenix, Las Vegas, San Diego, Milwaukee, North Little Rock, just let us know. We'd love to hear from you and have you on the program. All right. Let's go next to 414. You were on – Oh, no, yeah, there you are. Yep. 414. Go ahead. State your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Ken from Wisconsin, Milwaukee. How you doing, Wade?
Doing good. Do you agree with my Viking prediction they're going to the Super Bowl?
I'm not sure about the Viking and the Super Bowl thing. I'm a Green Bay fan, so I really can't go with it.
I figured with them in the news with that quarterback you have apparently deciding to stay. It hurts our chances a little bit of finally reaching the Super Bowl.
So a little bit.
We want to send him over to the AFC.
Yeah, probably.
Well, anyway, yeah. Thanks for calling, Ken. Yeah, what you think of Raw tonight?
So just let me gather my thoughts about this really quickly because, I was a WWE fan that stopped watching years ago. And I tuned back in after the pandemic just to see what they were doing. And I'm a big AEW fan now. Pretty much the only thing I watch. WWE's kind of lost me as a customer. So I dropped back in to see what was going on. And I really think WWE Raw in particular is blowing it with the live crowd momentum that was built up for pretty much every major wrestling show that was going on. You watch AEW and the crowd's so hot for everything that it just enhances the show, makes everything feel that much more special. I watch a lot of this WWE stuff with the crowd, and it seems like their fans want to be excited. They want to kind of go and represent and say, hey, we can be a hot crowd too. But they get lost in so much of the bad booking and just the three-minute matches. I think on this show alone, it was just a string of three-minute wrestling matches, and you had a wrestling show. Whereas like AEW, you get a lot of 11 to 15, I don't know, minute matches. And I just want to get your take on, in a year's time with all of this, I don't know where you go to after this because it seems like they've damaged everybody over at least the last 10 years that came up from NXT so much that no one means anything, and they're still going back to, like, Goldbergs and Cena's and stuff now, 15-year-ago stars. So in a year's time, what are the odds that you guys think – that AEW could be outdrawing at least Raw on a regular basis weekly?
Yeah, it was, I think it was two episodes or three episodes ago at Dynamite that I said it on the post show that is the type of show that can overtake Raw, given what we're seeing from WWE Raw. Todd Martin said it on The Fix. Somebody else just told me they said it, and I do so many podcasts, I'm forgetting who. But, like, we all thought that. Like, there was this week where everybody was like, oh, my God. Like, you remember what Dynamite is like with a live crowd. You remember how over this product is. And Raw, you know, was still in the Thunderdome setting, so the contrast was even sharper then. But so, yes, I think within a year, especially if they bring in CM Punk and Bryan Danielson, I mean, maybe less than a year, AEW is outdrawing Raw. Not in some key demo that they're strong in, like total viewership. You know, it's about I was talking to Rich Fan earlier on Everything with Rich Fan for VIP members. We did an hour and a half show covering Nick Gage and Matt Cardona and Jay White. And we had like real good mix of diverse topics. We talked a lot about Punk and Danielson though at the top of the show for like 40 minutes and the impact that they can have in the ratings. And, you know, I mean, AEW is around 1.2 million if you round up. Raw is around 1.8 million if you round down a little bit. And for easy math, that's like a 50% lead that Raw has. It's not 2-1. It's about a 50% lead. They can close that gap. Raw with shows like this is going to lose a couple hundred thousand people. And AEW, if they get Danielson and Punk, and I'm getting good at this now, Danielson, not Bryan, they're going to gain a couple hundred thousand. I mean, you're talking a close battle, perhaps by fall, given the current trajectory. Now, that doesn't mean everything goes AEW's way and everything goes against that Raw doesn't correct course somehow. I'm not sure how they do it with Vince McMahon still in creative control. I just, you know, people talk about Vince's age, and I don't like to dwell on that. I think people should be given a chance, no matter what age they are, to have an open mind to them changing or not changing and adapting or not adapting, regardless of their age. It's not Vince's age that's preventing Raw from being good. It's Vince's decisions week in and week out that's preventing him from improving Raw. And he's smart and capable and has a budget and can choose to delegate to smart people, too, to make this happen. And he has in the past, you know, in the Attitude Era, he did when his back was against the wall. So I'm not giving up hope, but I don't know what it's going to take for that moment to occur to Vince where he says, all right, you know, I have my way, I have my beliefs. I have people telling me my beliefs are right. It's not the results aren't there. So I need some ruthless aggression behind the scenes with some new voices. You know, Vince Russo was that voice in the – he was a magazine writer who was listening to a booking meeting and going, is this what happens in here? Because this is ridiculous. And he spoke out, you know, and he triggered change. And so it's going to take something like that to happen. But if it doesn't, my answer to your question, Ken, is – I think AEW catches up to Raw within the next year, if not, you know, in the first half of the next year. Javier, where are you on that?
Yeah, I didn't say it out loud, but yeah, I've been saying that they're both trending in different directions. And the thing is that in a lot of these cases, things end up happening. You know, you plot it out this is going to be like in a couple of years' time or whatever. But sometimes this stuff just happens exponentially. And yeah. It's just because it just picks up steam. And yeah, I mean, earlier caller talked to, you know, how do they turn the ship around? And it's, you know, when your ship is already halfway in the ocean, you know, sinking, can you?
you know, somebody said after watching Kevin Nash with Steve Austin that Kevin Nash is still the coolest dude on the planet. And this sounds crazy because people, you know, look at Kevin Nash as one of the main reasons that Nitro, you know, WCW lost the momentum they had with a lot of the politics were being played. But I think about, like, what would Vince need to do? And it's like, and I don't know where Triple H and Kevin Nash are now, you know, in terms of their, you know, their relationship. But if you brought the band back together, so to speak, and Hunter brought in, you know, he's got Michaels working with him hand-in-hand in NXT, but he brought in Nash. I'm not sure about Hall. His attitude can be kind of toxic, but maybe he's in a good place. And Sean Waltman, and said, let's just sit down. And I know this sounds crazy to people because, you know, they're in a lot of places, they're framed as the enemy. But Nash is like the guy who can watch Raw and just be like, that's not cool. Here's how to make it cool. That's stupid. Everybody knows it's stupid. Stop doing that. Like, he's going to be that guy with just that aura and he's one of the smartest people I've gotten to know in a wrestle. Like, just mega smart. It's like Dennis Miller-esque with his references, and I just feel stupid because I only get like a third of them, but I laugh at like three-fourths of them, so I don't seem too out of touch with what he's saying. And so I just throw that out there. And not that that's the only solution, but it's fresh in my mind because of the promo they did or the commercial for Nash talking with Austin tonight. Like, the show just needs to get cooler. It needs to be a more contemporary, cool vibe to the show. And there's a lot of pieces there that could be, including Rhea Ripley and Becky Lynch. Alexa Bliss probably could be, on and on. You know, like, so they just need somebody to just sit down and just have the power or the influence. So whether that's Triple H running things or, you know, whatever, that's the kind of the go-to thing. But with NXT, it's not the coolest company in the world, but it's also, he's the assistant coach. He's under Vince McMahon. If he was given power and could bring some people in, what would he do with a budget? I don't know. But I don't know how bad it has to get before Vince does what he did in the Attitude Era and says, all right, here's what got me here over the last, you know, 10, 12 years. And now I clearly need to change. And I don't know when that moment comes. Javier, any follow-up on that before I throw back to Ken?
A complete change of philosophy and make people care. Cause I mean, that's the thing that, WWE seems like they don't really want you to care too much about the storyline. They don't want you to get too invested because, you know, they don't want, you know, they don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. They want to try to be, you know, they're trying to catch too wide of a net to catch too many, you know, fans. And, you know, we talk about how AEW Super serves, you know, a certain kind of fan. But, you know, it works because that's your core audience. And then you build around that, but you need to make sure you don't lose sight of them. WWE just gave up on that idea. And it's just like a general, idea. And I'll equate it to like Nintendo, you know, like the Nintendo Entertainment System or Nintendo, you know, in the console wars with Xbox and PlayStation, they play by their own rules. But, you know, a lot of the people, they get more, you know, it's almost like you have two different camps where the people who play Nintendo are different from the people who play the other consoles. And they're diehards of that, but they're not, you know, it doesn't like explode like, you know, something on the Xbox or PlayStation or PC would. And that's the thing with WWE because it's, yeah, you have the people who are always going to be WWE fans. And I'm going to be watching it just, you know, because of either impulse or momentum, you know, watching it because of momentum. But it's like, you got to do something for them. feed more, you know?
Yeah. The inertia can only withstand so much resistance and headwind and obstacles. Eventually, the inertia and habit of tuning in to a show, I mean, it's happened with me with TV series. It's happened to me with sports teams I follow over the years. I mean, you'll watch a bad team that's poorly managed with players half-heartedly going through the motions with no hope of any happy ending. You'll watch for a while out of loyalty and inertia, but eventually you start going, I've got something else to do tonight or something else to watch tonight, or I'm going to watch the national game instead of the local game on cable. You know, and eventually you just find yourself not building your schedule around things. And WWE is at risk of that happening. It happened to WCW, and it is happening to them. It has happened to them. Their numbers are so much smaller than they were just 3 years ago. And it's not just, you know, I mean, AEW showing, you know, it's not just inevitable, an inevitable loss of viewers because of the shift to people watching on-demand Netflix type stuff. Ken, back to you for any more.
Yeah, just to wrap it up, like hearing what you're saying, Wade, and I've been a VIP member for, I think, about 10 years now. So I've been listening to you for a long time. And what you're saying now, it's funny and fascinating how similar it is to what you were saying 7 years ago, where those things were, it was some head scratching things that have now become just accepted bad parts about WWE. It's been that long and it's just getting worse and worse. Yeah. They were relying on, you know, Goldberg then. So hopefully, I don't know what you do because they're not making anybody, whereas AEW is making people and acquiring people. So, I don't know. I don't know what you do about that. So I'll let you guys keep going. Go VIP. Watch the story unfold 10 years ago. It's fascinating.
Ken, thank you so much. You brought a smile to my face. I appreciate your support and your kind words about our VIP membership. And, yes, the reminding us that some of the things we're saying, we've been saying, you know, for years. All right. We will move next here to wrap up with Nick, who gets the Javier spot. Javier, can I play a little music for Nick, or would that offend you?
Yeah, that's fun.
Okay. Let's see what we got. Wade Keller, Pro Wrestling. Okay, there we are. All right, so that's the music for Nick, although you heard my voice.
All right,
too.
I love
Nick
it.
From Brattleboro, welcome. You can wrap up the caller section.
I'll be great,
the
to, great, great to talk to you and not just listen. So hope everyone's doing well tonight. Before I bury Raw, I do want to say one nice thing. And I think, you know, we've for years, for like 2 or 3 years, I think we've all been getting on Charlotte and her robotics and her, you know, just, you know, not really being able to bring it. And I thought she really brought it tonight in the last segment. She's seems to be talking from the heart, whether, you know, Paul Heyman has gotten to her or something, but she, I was captivated by her brutality and her smugness and her attitude. And it's just, it was great admiring what a good heel can do when they're on their game.
Javier, do you agree with that this was a good night for Charlotte overall?
Her performance, yeah. I mean, some of the stuff near to the end I thought was counterproductive in terms of, you know, the overall storyline necessarily. But yeah, her performance, like, in the beginning, as I remember, one of my notes was, you know, Nikki Cross's promo where she's, you know, talking about how you believe in yourself and if you believe, you could do anything. I wasn't feeling that because she barely mentioned that you also need work. You can't just wish things into being. And then Charlotte came out, and first thing she says, oh, that's nice that you believe, but I was champion because of the work I did. And I'm like, oh, you're my baby face now. but, yeah, she definitely was strong, and that in that opening promo, she you know, it was your classic heel promo, but, you know, she was, you know, she put her emotions into it, and she was connecting to what she was saying. So whether, you know, some of those things she believed are true or not, she made me believe that she believed them.
There we go.
Yeah. Then just it almost seems to me that as AEW is getting edgier and bringing the heat, and they've got their hardcore matches, but they've also got regular good matches. They've got high flyers and everything else. It almost seems like Vince is going, well, I'll show them. I'm going to go full bore into the 5 to 10-year-old demo and show them that I can still do it because that, I mean, Nikki almost, she actually even said it. She said, the kids are important, but it was like, it's like, that's not who, maybe 15 years from now they'll be good for your audience, but right now you've got to get those 25-year-olds. You've got to, whether advertisers are going for 18 to 49, 25 to 54, I was in the television business, so these are all natural terms to me, that you can't just go after, you can't tailored to the Nickelodeon audience, unless you're going to be on Nickelodeon.
I think if you look at the history of Vince McMahon, there has been a tendency to, you know, aim towards the kids, even though their audience is largely, you know, 50 plus, Javier. But when you go to, when you see the people who go to house shows, you know, it's so many families. They are marketing to different people in different ways right now. I mean, the idea is AEW knows who they're marketing to. They market to them unapologetically, unabashedly, and they're doing a good job with it. Vince McMahon knows who he's marketing to, and he does so unabashedly and aggressively, and it's just a poor job of it. You know, I mean, like, that's part of it. And it's needlessly excluding this whole middle section that advertisers care most about, which is a problem.
Yeah, the only thing I would say, though, The only thing I would say about your theory is, yeah, they've always booked that way, but I've noticed on several shows now that they have done some stuff where I think they would consider edgy. There was a match with where – I forgot which match it was, but the wrestler hit his head on the turnbuckle. Oh, Cesaro, and it was bleeding and stuff like that, and the camera didn't shy away from that. There was another moment where with I think Sheamus was or somebody else was bleeding from the nose, and they focused in on that. Might have been Charlotte at some point. And today, Drew McIntyre flipped off the lawyer guy before he did the Claymore.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing some stuff, I think, to like see what they can get away with. I think from the network. I mean, you know, they say the S word on occasion, but they've dropped it last week when. Lashley said, you know, we're going to end this bullshit, and in a way that, not in a way that they'll, you know, that is okay to say like on prime time, but in a way that like that usually gets bleeped. So I think they're trying to get away with a little bit more here and there, and see how far they can get to try to, you know, but they're, I think they're just, you know, it's kind of like when they fell in love with bitch every episode.
Yeah.
To try to seem edgy. So I think they're kind of trying to do that without, like, really being edgy like, you know, AEW.
Go ahead, Nick.
I mean, you're right. I mean, they are, you know, it's really weird is what they decide to bleep. I mean, when Cena said the A word, in reference to Reigns, they bleeped that, which was very strange. But what do you think about the whole thing that they have been advertising Cena, you know, the summer of Cena, and he was advertised to be on this show, and he was just on the dark match, so serving the live audience, but not the television audience.
I think that's smart. I think Cena would get overexposed, Nick. I mean, he's got nothing to talk about on Raw other than to be the brand cheerleader. So I was worried they were going to put him on television. And I just think you need Cena to be, you know, not less is more, but like leave you wanting more at least. And he already started to veer a little into, you know, like a couple times. And I just think that if he's having to fill time and he doesn't have anyone solid to feud with, I mean, he's not going to go out there and have, you know, marathon matches on Raw and SmackDown every week. And you know, the specialness of him wrestling is what's going to sell tickets and make SummerSlam seem a bigger deal than Raw and SmackDown. So I get what you're saying, but I don't know that – did they overtly advertise him as being on television this week?
Yeah, on their website. It says, you know, Cena on, you know, and it shows all the days that he's on. Now, maybe that's just them saying – that he's going to be there, and so the dark match fulfills that. I mean, as I said, it could be that's really more just serving the live audience to get the ticket sales. I wouldn't know. I mean, that's your entire. It's very likely that you're correct that they're pushing that to get live ticket sales, and they'll sprinkle them in where it seems appropriate.
Yeah, that's my thinking now. Yeah.
And to answer your question on the Nikki ASH thing, there is a there's a romance sex novel, you know, the kind of the romance books author who's a big bestseller named Nikki Ash.
Oh, funny. Wow. Okay.
Yeah,
well,
I went
and
looked it up.
Yeah.
So maybe.
Was their second choice Nikki Cleveland Guardians until they found out that there was also a men's lacrosse league with
it? Yeah, no, I mean, when you guys were talking about it, I went and looked it up. So maybe Miss Ash said, hey, you're messing with my brand here.
I was going to say, you're really fulfilling my job. I'm usually the one looking stuff up during
this. Yes, you are. I'm a little let down. But you know what? He's in the Javier slot, so it makes sense.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It fits. It fits. The last point I wanted to make was I thought it was actually, and this is just WWE generally, just that they made this big deal that Sheamus is wearing the face mask because – you know, he's not medically cleared not to wear it and all that sort of stuff. And I know from the online correspondent that it actually did come off kind of accidentally. But one of the things that frustrates me so much with WWE is that they're so inconsistent with their own I'm not using the word in that way, but their own universe that it should have been something. If he can't wrestle without that thing, then they should have, you know, paused, and it should be put back. You know, there should be continuity in, and it's one of the things that just rubs me the wrong way, just because I'm a perfectionist somewhat, that it's like, and I know you rail against this, that they need to put out a rule book and follow it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's just, it seemed to me that it was a little jarring that they just kind of let it flew by.
My thinking on that was they should always be duct tape kept at ringside, because they could have just duct taped that thing back to his face. It would be hard to get it out of his hair afterwards, but duct tape solves everything. And they didn't even have if they don't have a second mask, at least have duct tape. They just wrap it around his head and he could have been safe. And then it would have been consistent with the medical clearance.
Or take some gauze and put it on his nose and then duct tape that around.
Yes.
But I know I'm not as good at this as Javier is, but that's about all I had. I'm just kind of astounded at go up against the Olympics. I mean, who cares?
I know.
You know, the Olympics are, I mean, I was watching, and I was watching women's beach volleyball. It was a lot of fun to watch, but, you know, go up and tangle with them. Put on a good enough show that'll keep the mountain bike race uninteresting to people.
Come back, you know. Maybe NBC didn't want them. That's the best excuse. Is Vince McMahon is like, oh God, NBC told us not to put on a good show because they want the Olympics to do well because they paid so much money for it. I mean, if they overtly hard market Raw and go, we're going to have an Olympic-themed event, we're going to do all kinds of fun stuff, I mean, they could have done some sort of tie-in and had some, you know, synergy. But it just seems like they were like, just waving the white flag this week.
It's frustrating to me because I've been watching WWE in its many incarnations, WWF, back in the late 60s. I took a little break in the 2000 aughts, it's getting harder and harder and harder for me to watch every week. I'm getting into ROH now because I'm doing the hits and misses for you guys.
Yeah.
And even without an audience, I mean, listen, some of the wrestling is not great, and without an audience, it's kind of a tough watch. But you can see these guys are kind of going out there and really laying themselves out and striving and the Vince, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's a symbol of also the pay-per-views, is that it's not a pay-per-view anymore, so he doesn't care that he puts the same match on 10 times before the pay-per-view. It just so waters down everything that it gets very frustrating to me. And with that, I will let you and Javier wrap things up and go to some mail. And I'm honored, Javier, to have tried to fulfill your spot this week.
Yeah, good job, man.
All right.
And good
awesome. Well, you guys
and,
have a good night.
Good to actually talk to you.
There's all these people, Javier, who like they you know talk before you and after you, but they never get to like be at the same place at the same time as you and say hi. So it's fun being witness to that here.
So you have proof that we're different people.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. I said we got some fun mail. I don't know how long we'll spend on it because I think we've covered most things, but there is some good emails here. I'll at least read. We can respond to briefly. First, Keith from Detroit. The Nikki A.S.H. promo to open Raw was mind-grating. At the end, you could tell she was just reading what some writer wrote, and I groaned along with the audience. So, you know, I immediately opened the YouTube TV app on my phone and canceled my $65 a month subscription. It was that bad. Oh, my God. I'll try to watch the pay-per-views on Peacock, but that's all I can stomach anymore from WWE. Their very best. Good luck sitting through this. I'm done. So Google, YouTube TV takes a hit tonight because of the quality of Raw. I know there's cheaper options. Heck, it's tough. There's not – about 65 is probably the lower end right now of what you can do to have access to USA Network content. So, yeah, I mean, if that's the only reason he was getting AT&T TV and Raw's frustrated him that much, I mean, he can still watch SmackDown. Everybody can watch SmackDown free with an over-the-air antenna. You don't need to pay a cent once you buy the antenna half a year. So, anyway, yeah, any thoughts on that?
No, there was something I was using because I was going to cut the cord, but ended up not. But that I was using, and it was like $20 a month or something. I don't even know if they're still around. And USA was part of the $20 package. Yeah.
I think Sling.
That's what it was. It was Sling.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah,
it was. Sling.
Yeah, no, Sling. Sling is actually Sling. People mock it, but Sling has a good setup where you can get like there's like two color coded ones, like orange and blue or something. And it's basically if you're more sports oriented, there's this package. If you're more like reality TV or something, you know, demographically, there's another one. And then you kind of split the channels in half. And then if you get both, I think you get a little discount. If you get the whole kind of pack, the whole what ends up being basically like cable. I've got AT&T TV just because they have the regional sports. So I switched from YouTube TV to AT&T TV. And it's fine. Their channel guide is obnoxious. But because it's like it's like dial-up internet getting the guide to catch up to your scrolling, but because they add descriptions to each show, and I don't want descriptions. I just want to scroll quickly and see what's on. But that little mini ran out of the way. I cut the cord like a year ago, and it's really nice not having cable boxes and being tied down to that. But yeah, the options just keep getting a little more expensive, but they include HBO Max with my sub. I don't know if they still do. So anyway, on to the next email. John in Tennessee. The Keith Lee and Karrion Kross match felt like it was in slow motion. Keith Lee just doesn't move like he did in NXT, and he has the worst working punch in the business. How did that punch not get corrected during his time at NXT? Kross at least has some energy, but he doesn't come off like a star in these unannounced matches without Scarlett. Vince not putting Scarlett on TV has me more convinced than any other decision he's made in the last 20-ish years that he's not all there mentally anymore. The 1999 Vince McMahon would have her in five segments minimum. Also, do you think we get T-Bar and Dominic Dijakovic repackaged after the draft? He's super talented and has the size they look for on the main roster. Everyone listening, go VIP. Thank you, John. I appreciate that. I thought T-Bar and Mace had a little more like vigor and energy and personality. Like they were, you know, Gray said they're the post-apocalyptic pair. The problem is the apocalypse hasn't happened yet. Give us, I don't know, 2 to 6 years. I think we're probably heading there. Not to scare people, but live it up while you can. democracy is tick-tocking. And they did seem a little more like animated going into the break and then coming out of the break. But there is talent there. And when you look at what they could be doing better, like Dominic Dijakovic, he's somebody who they could absolutely have in a better spot.
Yeah, I mean, talent's not the WWE's problem. It's just how they get used. And I'll give them props for one of the things I've liked that they've been doing lately, and it's been for a while now, having those promos right before the match, just a little thing to get the characters across. Their performance was good. Their content, completely different story. So, you know, I do agree with that because they deserve better, you know?
Yeah. Dave from Harrisburg, PA said, hey, Wade and Javier, I have to tell you, as soon as I saw that it was Kross against Lee, I knew it was going to be really bad for Keith Lee. I'm guessing they needed to make up for that horrendous mistake of a loss they served Kross last week. Unfortunately, it was at Keith Lee's expense. I'm guessing Keith Lee is just waiting out his contract at this point. His main roster run, like so many NXT call-ups, has been an absolute disaster. What a shame. As always, appreciate all the great content. And hey, everyone, go VIP. Have a good night. I don't make that up, people. Like, go VIP. These are VIP members telling me to go VIP. You should take their advice. PWTorch.com/goVIP to get information on what everybody's endorsing here. It's not all on Vince McMahon when it comes to Keith Lee. I mean, he could be getting more out of Keith Lee. He's pushed guys who can't work. He's pushed guys who are awful. He's pushing Eva Marie and Amos. You know, I mean, he can work around Keith Lee. I think Vince pushes back against people who come in with high acclaim, and he looks for a reason to prove that the indie darlings and NXT darlings and whatever are flawed. I think he takes a little joy and does unconsciously. I don't think he knows he's doing it, but I think he looks for flaws in people who come in with acclaim who made it before getting to his main roster, and he picks them apart. I think that plays into it. But Keith Lee has a role too. You know, I mean, he's not in great cardio shape, and he's at an age where carrying less weight and watching his diet and being more fit would serve him. So I just think it's a disaster coming on from both angles here, Javier.
Yeah, I mean, from the what you've said about the behind-the-scenes stuff, yeah, it's and some of the stuff on, like, on Twitter and stuff, it's just reading between the lines. It's just this, it's hard to put into words, but yeah, that went nowhere.
Yeah, I know, but I think people who know what you mean know what you mean.
Yeah.
All right, Zach in Texas. I came into Raw with an open mind and thinking positive thoughts, and then that opening segment sucked all the positivity from my body. I love Nikki, but this children's TV superhero gimmick isn't working for me, probably because I'm not in preschool. I fully expect her to drop the belt tonight so the adults could get back to business. Instead, they're not only having her take that Pee-wee's Playhouse character to a marquee match at Summer. That is a huge insult to Pee-wee's Playhouse, by the way. That plays to adults very well. It holds up well. That was very smartly done. But it takes that Pee-wee's Playhouse character to a marquee match at SummerSlam. It's going to be a triple threat. Nikki versus Charlotte again next week after Charlotte beat Nikki clean as a sheet. I can't. I just can't. Where's Becky Lynch, and why isn't she saving us from this debacle? The Raw Women's Division is a trash fire, and nobody seems to have any desire to put it out. Oh, I bet there's a lot of people who want to put it out. They just don't have Vince McMahon's ear.
Yeah.
All right, Joby says, I've been rewatching a lot of late 90s WWE, and as a last fan watching Raw tonight, one thing really stuck out to me that I don't hear talked about much. WWE set and lighting is so much different than it was in the late 90s when it felt like you were in a dive bar. Now it's sterile. That's the word I'd use for Raw these days. It's like being in an Apple store. The ridiculously big entrance set, LED screens anywhere you could possibly stuff them, 500 rotating spotlights, the goofy augmented reality, and the arena being lit up like a greenhouse at times makes it feel so lifeless. I think we've reached the point where less is more, and I love the way AEW, New Japan, UFC, etc. have modest sets and dim the lights when the match starts. Raw felt like going to a movie and the theater turning every single light up to a 10 when the movie starts. Maybe superficial, but it seems like the popularity of the company is inversely related to the size of the set. Again, I could be crazy, but I'm curious if you think the current setup detracts. It is neutral, and or it doesn't matter, or is a positive for WWE. Thanks, and go VIP. Another one. Current day coverage is worth going VIP for alone, but the nearly endless archives are such an interesting time capsule. It's been really fun to watch 20 years ago stuff and then pull up the corresponding newsletter to read the inside coverage as was written in that moment in time. So yes, JB brings up a good point. We do have week-to-week contemporaneous coverage in our newsletter dating back to the late 1980s. So anything that's happened basically since the first SummerSlam, we've got covered. Like, In the newsletter, you can look it up. It's a year-by-year directory, and you can go load up the date and find our coverage of that story or that big episode of Raw or Nitro or whatever. It is the largest single source of insider coverage anywhere. So JB is right. You should go VIP. All right, Javier, the new set, I've gone back and forth on it. I'm like a fan of the Apple Store aesthetic. I like, you know, modern clean lines and simple logos. I like the old NXT logo, not this new thing Triple H put out there. You know, I don't like clutter in much of any aspect of my life. But it does sort of feel like they just said, let's put a really big screen up there because it'll be a lot cheaper to build, to set up. And they're just trying to save some money, like to make their bottom line more attractive for some buyer. Like, it doesn't come across as some sort of inspired artistic statement about what's going to make Raw a better show. And when I was looking at the old Raw set from 10 years ago, I was like, oh, it's, you know, it doesn't look as the technology wouldn't have been there 10 years ago to have the screen we see on Raw now. Yet I sort of thought that was more interesting. You know, it felt more rugged. So anyway, your thoughts on that aspect of the production?
Yeah, I mean, the Raw is probably the worst named show since, like, there's nothing Raw left on that show.
Yes.
You know, it's just so produced and everything needs to be perfect. And, yeah, I mean, the current look is just I'm fine with it. The one thing, not having the ramp, I would have – Drew McIntyre should just not do the sword thing anymore because putting out that stupid stone out there, that turnbuckle was, like, a really cool entrance that I thought was really cool anyway to, like, just – you look like a child now. I'm just not and you're right on the terms that it seems like they're cutting corners because it reminded me of, like, a lot of the new Disney rides – are essentially just pretty much an LCD screen, and they're playing a video, sometimes 3D or something, in order to cut down costs on the animatronics and stuff. So that I got that vibe that you were talking about. I mean, they're doing some cool stuff with it, but yeah.
All right, up next, JP in Detroit. Didn't I just read his email? Did he mail twice? I'm so confused. No, it's totally different people. Okay, sorry. I should have known that from years of you guys emailing. But a different JB email. This JB from Detroit. It's back-to-back emails. It just dawned on me that the remnants of Retribution, Mason T-Bar, have lasted more than a year now, which is amazing to me. Secondly, I assume the closing angle on Raw was meant to get sympathy on Nikki A.S.H. But honestly, she just came across as pathetic to me with this almost a superhero crap being some justification for yet another women's championship rematch set for next week. And finally, I don't know what it is, but using an actual acronym as part of a wrestler's name really bugs me for some reason. It would come across a lot better and less clunky if she was simply Nikki A.S.H. As always, love the show. Go VIP. Well, take it up with that romance novelist if you are upset. I don't know. I guess we covered everything there. Anything you want to add?
I understand the Nikki A.S.H. thing because if you now I can't say A.S.H. because I was, you know what I mean? The Nikki thing where if you're not invested in the character, it's stupid and silly and childish. If you're into the character, you're going to get into the story of her getting beat up by Charlotte. But it's similar to the Orange Cassidy in AEW that if you're not into that character, you just see the stuff he does and it's stupid. But that's the thing is that just they haven't done anything to really get the average viewer attached to the character Nikki A.S.H. So
All right, Jason in Perth, Western Australia. I'm happy for the success of Nikki the person, but I can't stand the new character. It's exactly the type of thing that makes wrestling cringe inducing to non fans. They could tell the same story of Nikki overcoming self-doubt and a fear of failure without the superhero aspect. It's almost Eugene-level stuff to me. Yeah, actually, it's very close to Eugene now. WWE clearly doesn't seem to switch up their format. We saw all their favorite tropes tonight, an in-ring promo to set up a main event, two champions losing non-title matches or championship contenders matches. A rematch we've seen multiple versions of over the last month, a DQ finish, a roll-up finish. They did it all. If you could have WWE discontinue one of their repetitive booking crutches, which one would you choose? Well, I think the whole system would break down, Javier, if they did this, but I would have them drop distractions because that would just quantifiably lead to the biggest change in how they book the lead-up to finishes. But in a broader sense, and it's not on his list, well, no, it is. A rematch we've seen multiple versions over the last month. That I actually would probably prioritize that right now because I think it's probably a bigger deal than distractions is how repetitive – the same matches, slightly rearranged our week after week.
I'd go with the fake finishes to broaden it up a little bit so I get a little bit more out of that. Mm-hmm. And because I think that if you remove the fake finishes, you cannot have the same match over and over again because you're not protecting people with fake finishes. So you get a bunch of stuff out of that.
Yep. All right, second to last here, unless Javier, you forgot something and email me while we're talking. Sean from Murfreesboro.
I should.
I know, that'd be hilarious. Or Nick Kent, if he really wants to live up to your list. To you. Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. In my opinion, guys, I'm halfway through the show and I haven't been a fan. First, I don't understand all these contenders matches and why have Damian Priest and Sheamus wrestle already. Build it up to SummerSlam slowly because now the match doesn't feel as big. Next, the fans are helping Drew yell, Drew's going to kill you. I love Drew, but man, this material and this feud aren't doing him any favors, even though the crowd was more into it than I thought they would be. Third, why did Karrion Kross lose to Hardy, but then tonight beat Keith Lee with no builder backstory at all? I just don't know what Vince is thinking. Anyway, be glad to hear your thoughts. As always, you guys do a fantastic job. Wade, I appreciate you and Javier. Always enjoy your insight. Everyone, go VIP. Yeah, I guess we covered most of that. Other than Damian Priest and Sheamus, you know, I agree. I mean, I'd rather Sheamus just beating people up, but WWE cut all the people that he could be beating up, and they don't like flying people in from NXT if Vince doesn't know who they are and that they're safe and can bump yet. You know, they don't have that reliable jobber core, you know, that they did in the TV taping days where wherever they went, they just had a group of people they just trusted, you know, and they knew they'd show up and they wouldn't hurt their opponent. And, you know, they were just, you know, the Dusty Wolf types, and they just don't have that. But they should, you know, I mean, I having Sheamus win decisively and be an obnoxious heel and building up to Damian Priest to me would make more sense.
Well, I mean, didn't he do that by beating up Carrillo?
Well, yes, yeah. I mean, in a way, but I mean, the Carrillo thing was actually, I think, it ultimately was meant to build him up. I mean, I think they wanted Carrillo to be, this was a test if he could, you know, he was ultimately going to lose to Sheamus, and that's fine. But I don't think the idea was to bury him. But then going from Damian Priest standing up for poor Humberto to just having a match and giving it away on TV just feels like they're kind of undoing the payoff to, because they, like AEW headline, like half their roster can be in a main event, you know, at least half the Dynamite roster, maybe not, you know, inclusive of AEW Dark, but they can main event with a lot of people and get away with it. And Vince just won't try. He doesn't, you know, Priest and Sheamus could have been the TV main event, but he doesn't believe that that'll hold viewers, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. And I am curious to see how the Nikki and Charlotte main event holds up in the ratings.
I'm too. Yeah. I did not like Drew's starting the Drew's going to kill you thing. I just feel that's Joe's bit.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a lot of stuff in that match that was not, first off, teasing a lawsuit angle is just, I was screaming at the TV when he brought out the lawyer, and Veer no-sold what was essentially a Claymore Van Daminator.
Yep.
And I'm like, if I'm Drew McIntyre, I'm having words with him after that.
Yeah, that's a heck of a point. I also didn't like Drew beating up the lawyer. One, it was too cartoonish. The lawyer easily could have gotten away multiple times and didn't. You know, it's not like he's not like a bunny who freezes when scared. Maybe he is. Maybe he's part bunny. I don't know. But the idea that like you just beat up this like civilian basically because he's a lawyer. I mean, I thought the lawyer should have handed the chair, you know, slipped the chair under the ring. Then it's like, oh, okay, well, at least he did something. But did the lawyer do anything to like justify Drew just like killing him?
No, other than be a lawyer. I mean, that's, yeah. I think that's a joke.
And I mean, unless Vince wants to not have lawyers represent him, you know, anyway. All right. Finally, Ed in High Desert, California. Hello, Wade and Javier, all caps, exclamation. On Karrion Kross, what are we supposed to think of the guy? He's not a big guy. He has a bland look. His skill set is nothing special, and I don't think charismatic describes his promo. That is true. I've been saying that for a while. I heard you mention that you don't like to lean on Vince's age as a reason why things aren't good on Raw. I think a better way to say it is the amount of years Vince has in the business is what the issue is. After so many years, you do get isolated from everything with the product. Yeah, I mean, Vince is not, you know, I mean, he's seen like snippets of Succession. But he hasn't sat through, you know, a whole season. Like, he doesn't know what's out. I mean, he doesn't know what's out there. And, you know, so, yeah, he's not the most worldly guy. And I think you can be old and super up on things. And, I mean, Kevin Nash, when he's Vince's age in 15 years, is going to be, like, super in touch probably with pop culture. You know, like, and because he keeps up on stuff and he's a cool guy. He's like a sharp, cool guy. So, that is the point. It has to do with, you know, in a way, something that Vince has always been catching up to him. But part of it is he's run a largely monopolistic business against hapless competition. They either had funding and bad management or good management and no funding. That's oversimplifying it, but the combination of Tony Khan and what he brings to the table and the budget and the partnership with TNT and the, you know, confluence of Kenny and Cody and Jericho and Moxley and the Bucks. And I mean, it's just, he hasn't faced this before. So there's no question there are people who want to watch one wrestling show a week and they're only watching Dynamite. And they would be watching Raw or SmackDown instead. I mean, those people are out there. I don't know if it's, you know, 10,000, 100,000, or a million, but, you know, it's somewhere in that range. And Vince hasn't had that kind of competition in a while. And, you know, I don't know if Eric Bischoff would have it in him to do what he did in the mid-90s again, because people do have different aspirations and senses of accomplishment and all that. But Vince doesn't have another chapter of his life he wants to go to. You know, he's not going to sit down and be reflective and watch other people do things like a lot of people who get to his age when they retire do. That's not his makeup. Like, he's just going to do this until he can't because he doesn't know anything else, and he's still driven by certain aspects of the business. But, you know, I mean, I think it's a point, Javier, that it is more who he is and how long he's been himself, and then I think the lay of the land.
Yeah, and ultimately, you know, for most people, when you get older, you rely more on what you're comfortable with. So
yeah.
He goes back to the stuff that used to work, and you know, I would assume that the people that he surrounds himself with, and we know Bruce Pritchard, and you know, the people who, you know, probably have their own, it makes it harder, and those people are going to. Since he's older, are going to be more protective of him and act more of as a barrier to any good ideas that somebody might have getting to him. And that's why a lot of wrestlers tell you that the most important thing is getting a meeting with him, because you're talking to him directly and you might be able to get something if you're able to convince him. But, you know, the older that, you know, it's a thing. It's just that he'll rely more on what he's used to and what's worked for him before.
Yeah. Ed, I know you wrote more. We've run really long. I'm going to mark that as a topic to cover a little bit more in a Weight Killer flagship or a Weight Killer hotline for VIP members. So look for that. And he does close saying go VIP to keep our streak alive. Thank you, Ed, from High Desert, California, for our show closing email. Because, yeah, it looks like neither Javier nor Nick sent an email in just now, Javier. Javier, tell people what you do for The Torch, how they can read and listen to you.
Well, I write the primers for the pay-per-views for WWE, AEW, and Impact, and I'm proud of those because it's a way that if you have guests and stuff coming over to hang out with you and they're not into wrestling, you can just read the story in a nutshell, and just one often run-on sentence that it gives you an idea of what this match is about.
Yeah.
And then I also do the New Japan Pride podcast, which drops at random times. I kind of just because of work, but this weekend, big episode covering New Japan is everywhere now, so it's Impact Wrestling, AEW, New Japan, and New Japan Strong. Since I consider that a different company because it's different, it's a different company. How the Japanese do business, but yeah, so it's basically for. Four companies. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
It was a hell of a week.
Awesome. Do you want people to follow you on social media? And if so, how and where?
I don't remember off the top of my head. So.
That works. Works for me. You can follow me on Twitter at The Wade Keller. You can follow our brand on Twitter at PW Torch. You can email me at kellerwade@gmail.com for anything not related to the podcast. If you attend a live event, like a house show, like a super show, you're welcome to send results to pwtorch@gmail.com. But the main email for this show, as you hear often, is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Any feedback, any additional thoughts, different perspectives, always welcome. And we thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy what we do, and the work that we put in giving you these, like these shows multiple times throughout the week. We appreciate whatever podcast app you're using. Give us a 5-star rating and some kind words. Those help the algorithm of other people finding us. If you have suggestions or complaints or critiques, you can post them publicly, but instead it'd be helpful to send it to me. I'm more likely to see it. And then it doesn't hurt our algorithm either. So, let us know what you think of the show. And I think that is it, other than just thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. And it's been fun hearing from some new voices on the caller list. As, the ratings indicate, there are more people watching than there had been. And that's reflective in our listenership and also the mix of callers. So welcome aboard. And we'd love to, if you haven't called, add you to the list this Wednesday or Friday on the post-Dynamite and post-SmackDown shows. Javier, it's been great spending a couple hours with you instead of just 10, 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's awesome. Thanks a lot for having me. It's always fun. And I found it. It's at Jay Machado, LK.
There it is. That's your Twitter handle. So give him a few followers there. He may even notice.
Yeah.
All right.
Take care. Have a good night, Wade.